All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Let's go, kids.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My team Suprema.
Yeah.
Ain't no half stepping.
Yeah.
Robert Townsend,
yeah,
ain't he got no weapon?
Oh, Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Fonte,
yeah,
and I'm feeling cool.
Yeah,
I finally graduated.
Yeah, yeah.
From Black acting school.
Roll call, Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
Back on the hash.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Did I see you on MASH?
Suprema, Suprema,
deep cut. Deep cut.
Suprema, Suprema roll call.
It's Laia.
Yeah.
Don't need no bib.
Yeah.
Robert Townsend.
Yeah.
Can I get one rib?
Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Approximation.
Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Robert.
Yeah.
I'm in town.
Yeah.
And getting down.
Yeah.
With this crew in town.
Roll call.
Suprema. We see the boss clown.
Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
So I messed up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And someone tell me.
Yeah.
Where is unpaid bill?
Roll call.
Suprema. Suprema roll call. Sorry. Suprema.
Yeah.
Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Oh my God.
Sorry about that. I did the wrong version.
Huh? You keep taking two.
Well, you know, I forgot that Bill's not here, so I should have did it for five people, but instead.
Oh, I see.
Good
cover. Wow. Yeah.
Listen,
so.
Listen. Way too many references. This was a pressure. I was like, I want to put the bold, the black, and the beautiful. Like, with my heart. Like, it was just too many. It was too much.
Man. Okay. Can we?
I'm right about the MASH thing, right?
Yes, like, you are. Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Good. Just checking. Because otherwise.
All right. So, can we just collectively have a meeting?
Yes. Okay. Okay. Let's go.
Because we have a tendency.
We're not going to embarrass you.
To sing people's songs and act out.
I can't promise you that's not going to happen. I'm just letting you know.
Oh, no.
If I feel moved to sing A Heart is a House for Love, that's going to happen. I'm just saying.
I wish that raindrops would fall.
Fall.
Listen, don't come on.
Name.
Oh, Lord.
Name. All right. Look, ladies and gentlemen. Like, he's falling on the table. For real, or did you just fall off the table?
I did, and I'm so sober. I'm sorry. It's Robert Townsend. I'm excited.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I have questions I've been wanting to ask you since I was 8 years right. old, bro. You don't understand.
God.
Like, what
oh
my you mean well, to us, bro? Like, straight
well,
up.
Let me
introduce our guest first.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we know who it is.
All right, so, ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know where you landed, this is called Questlove Supreme. I'm your host, Questlove, and Team Supreme, of course, is strong. Fonticolo.
What up?
How are you, brother?
I'm with Robert Townsend. That's all that matters. Let's talk about him.
Steve?
Robert Townsend.
All right. Look, ladies and gentlemen, look, I will just say that maybe or maybe not in the Thompson household, times weren't that happy. I will say that this gentleman single-handedly alone probably provided 85% of all joy and happiness that happened at... I can't say my old address right because there's
somebody
a new,
pull up on
there's
Zillow.
A new right in Osage Avenue in West Philadelphia. I've probably, you know, probably second to coming to America, I've never quoted a film more than our guest and his debut movie as a director, Hollywood Shuffle. All of his films have touched our lives. Fonte's looking at me like, if you just don't say his name.
No,
ladies and gentlemen, Robert Townsend is on Questlove Supreme. Thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you guys for having me. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, and we should also note, Robin last night reminded me 42 times. She said, you're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. Robin Feedy wants to, you know.
Oh, she hooked us up? Robin?
Yes.
Because of my daughter, Sky.
That's right, because she's on Black Ladies Kiss Show.
Yes.
So every 12 seconds, Robin wanted to come up to let me know that. Thank you.
Thank you,
Shout
Robin.
Shout out to her and all the
Shout
writers.
Shout out to Robin.
Yeah,
congrats on the writers getting their money.
Yes. For real. So, I'm at a loss for words right now.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Because I don't want to start crying and all that
stuff.
I feel all emotional. Listen,
this is emotional.
Come on, man. You got a podcast to do. Let's go.
You are a direct line to like our childhoods, man. And like, you know what Amir was saying?
In our memories.
Memories. Like, you know, HBO, like the Partners in Crime episodes, like, dude, like that was an event. Like that was something, like that would come on me and our family. We'd be on the floor, like, I'm on the floor watching and like, all of that.
Are you wiping your tears with the script?
I don't know what. Yeah, I'm sorry. Because he's right. I'm listening to Fonte, and I'm like, yeah, that show in itself, that changed
the way we look at black people on screen. That changed us.
We had Patrice Rushen on the show like a couple years ago, and like we talked to her about, you know,
musical director.
The musical direction, man. It was really just pioneering in so many ways and hilarious.
All right, let's get the initial stuff out the way.
Let's do it.
Where were you born?
I was born in Chicago, Illinois, on the west side of Chicago.
Why did we come to LA to interview 10 people
like,
from Chicago?
All these Chicago people on our show.
We've had Sally Richardson, Hannibal Buress.
So why has Chicago been chosen as the epicenter of comedy? Even for like sketch shows, for writers, for acting, for comedy workshops, Chicago is where that starts. Is that just an SNL thing where,
you know, as a kid, I just remember west side of Chicago, you know, black folks, we always been funny. But then I studied at Second City when I was like 14, 15 years old. I started really young.
When did Second City start?
It's been around since the 60s.
And they always,
I thought Second City was like a 80s
thing. No, it's been around a long time.
They had a kids program.
Back then, my teacher was Joe Forsberg, but Dale Close was like Jim Belushi and all those guys. Wow. Everybody came
out.
So
you were
out
in
of
that class?
No, I wasn't in that class. I wasn't in Dale's class. I was in the other class.
Okay.
Yeah, but I started at Second City. I started doing improv, but I started in theater. I was like the youngest member of XBAG, Experimental Black Actors Guild. And it was like, you know, one of the actresses that came out, Mary Alice, who was in Sparkle.
Yes,
she came out of there. And a guy named Felton Perry was one of the writers. But my first mentor, so I started when I was 14, 15. So that's when I started. And I did my first movie. I was in Cooley High. I had two lines. I was doing a play at XBAG, and Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, Michael Schultz, the director, and Glenn Turman came to see me in the show, and I got a few. So that's when I started. And then I was an extra in Mahogany with Billy Dee and Diana Ross.
Wow.
So I've been like, as a baby, I started, you know, back in the game. But in terms of comedy, there was always comedy going around. But then I discovered, like, Rush Street had all the comedy clubs. I started performing, like, when I was 16, doing stand-up, 17. Yeah.
What's your domestic situation into in your childhood? Your parents, your siblings?
You know, here's the thing. I have four, there's four of us. I have two sisters, one brother, and my mother raised four kids on her own. My father wasn't there. He was in our lives, but he was in and out.
Right. Were you the baby or?
I'm the second oldest.
Oh, okay. Like, what are the aspirations of your life in your childhood? Are you?
I wanted to be a basketball player.
Okay.
I mean, like, I just went back to Chicago recently, and all my boys were still friends, but we were all, like, my nickname back then was Lef, because I got a sweet left-hand jump shot.
Okay.
And so then my other friend, his name was Ape, because he had long arms, and we used to call him Ape. And then you had Brown, Chris. He has two sons that were in the NBA, Shannon.
Shannon Brown?
That's his dad, Chris.
Wow.
And so we were all like little kids loving basketball, and Dennis Olive, we were all like just kids, and we used to go to the
You're
Chicago
still friends
stadiums.
With the friends from your childhood?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That is rare. And how does that happen?
Let me say this. Through the years, we always stayed in contact. And then let me say this. When you have a dream as a kid on welfare on the west side of Chicago and you just want to do something with your life, you need to have a circle of people that believe in you. And back then, even though my nickname was Left, they were like, you know, I said, I could do voices and characters when I was really young. And so they were like, Left, you got something. You got something, Left. And they always believed in me. And we just stayed. We just stayed in touch. And so, and then, and Carl Ape, you know, his name is Carl Brinson. He's the president of the Westside NAACP. And okay. So we always had like a righteous mindset. We got to do something. We got to take action, you know. So.
You were just neighborhood friends or were you connected through some,
it was just basketball. It was basketball. Okay. Everything was basketball, and we met on the basketball court.
It wasn't like a Jack and Jill thing or some
no,
sort of...
Jack and Jill. No.
Well, I mean...
In the hood, nah.
Whatever, right. Well, no, I'm just being like some sort of... Yeah, it could be church circles,
social club, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was basketball. We would play on the basketball court, and we played at all the different tournaments and stuff, and then I played in high school on different teams. I went to three different high schools, so I played at Weber Catholic, then Prosser Vocational, and then I graduated from Austin.
For me... Like, oftentimes, especially with black success and black stories, once you transition to another platform, the temptation to try to take everyone with you.
Right.
I mean, we can give an example, like maybe an Allen Iverson or whatever, like try to take everyone with you is a hard thing to do. And sometimes you can't go to these places and maintain what was beforehand. So,
well, it was for, you know.
And oftentimes your people might see your success as their success, and that's hard. So I'm really impressed that you still maintain childhood friendships.
Yeah, yeah. No, but they were real friends. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people, you know, that are not in my life that, they, you know, because there's certain, you know, like you have frenemies that are friends and they part enemy, and you just learn eventually to clean house and you surround yourself with the right people, and so I've been blessed.
Well, that's what's up. Did you know it was... acting, or were you just the thing where, like, I'm a fan of television and I can imitate these people? Or how do you know acting is what your true calling is? If
let me give you the story.
Okay.
So I am 10 years old. I live on the west side of Chicago. Neighborhood is surrounded by gangs, the Vice Lords, the Executioners, the Disciples, the Sinister Six. And my mother's afraid at 10 that I'm going to get recruited by one of the gangs. And so she goes, when you get out of school, run straight in the house. I run straight in the house, and all I do is watch television. I watch so much TV, they nickname me TV Guide. And they're like, TV Guide, what's on tonight? And I go like, NBC, they got a really good lineup. And then ABC, they're kind of cool. I think so-and-so and so-and-so. And then we were on welfare. And it's like, when you're on welfare, you can't buy soap because it's not food. It's food stamps. And so you always had that problem. And so I would always try to make my mother laugh. And so then I discovered that God had given me a gift to do the shows. Because there was a time for the youngsters, mm-hmm. there was a time that television went off.
Right.
And when television went off, you know.
We're all 12. Of age in here.
Yeah. You know,
well, except for Leia. You don't know about that.
Oh,
do you?
Yeah, no, no.
Okay.
I thought it was 12. I heard it was 12.
And television went off. And so if you missed a show, you missed a show. And so I discovered that I could do every show on television. So back when I was 10, 12, I could do voices and characters. And like if I saw a movie from, you know, French film, and I'd walk around the house. My brothers and sisters loved The Wizard of Oz. I would do all the characters. I'd have never gotten my brains if it wasn't for you. Why, the square root of one? I would do Alfred Hitchcock. Good evening. They found the body in the alleyway. I would do the westerns. Well, damn it, no bridge is fixed. You got to be out of town by 7 a.m. I was so good, I could do Lassie. Timmy's in the hood, so Pimp's got Timmy.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte Gallo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Here's a story. I got discovered in the fifth grade. There was a teacher. His name was James Reed. Tall white dude, you know, big nose. And he was just this beautiful man. And he wanted these little kids in the hood to learn about Shakespeare. And so he gave us 3 pages to read. And I just remember I got so nervous because it was like methinks and thou and though and thus. Yeah.
Elizabethan,
and so,
right.
Yeah. And so I went to the library and I stole all the Shakespeare records because I wanted to get an A. And I listened to them on our stereo at home, like Richard III. And I was like, a horse, my kingdom for a horse. All he wants is a horse. And then like, oh, Othello. And then I listened to all of them. And we had to read in class. And that's how I got discovered, because we had to read a scene from Oedipus. And I remember he was like, Deborah Jenkins, you'll be Ophelia, Willie King, you'll be Oedipus, and Robert Townsend, you'll be Tiresias, the blind prophet. Let's read. And they read like kids. Deborah read like a kid in the hood. Oedipus, you will marry thy mother and killeth thy father. And I had seen Shakespeare, you know, I was listening to the Royal Shakespeare Company, so I was like, Oedipus, I pray not the rage upon thy soul to be creatures thee not. And so I went deep, and the kids was like, ooh, your ass is crazy. But the teacher, after it was over, he was like, where did you learn that? Come here, Robert Towns. Where did you learn that? And I said, well, there's these records. You know, they was in the library, but now they in my house. But that's how they do it in England at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And that teacher took me under his wing. And he was the one who was the first one to say, you could be somebody. And I was like a little boy, and I was like, be somebody. And he was like, you could be somebody. So my journey started there.
So he planted the seed in you.
He planted the seed. And he came. It's 19. I won my first award in 1968. So it was like the, you know, like I remember doing the news for my mother when Martin Luther King got killed. I was that, you know, she says, what happened again? What happened again? At 12:42, Martin Luther King was leaving. And then Martin Luther King said, Mama, Martin Luther King said, we have been to the mountaintop, free at last, free at last. And I would do all the, I was like a little magical kid.
And did you realize in that moment too that like, although the amazing part was, yes, that you found these records and that you also mimicked these records, but the also amazing part was that you knew, unlike all your other classmates, that there were these records at the library, and to even do that, because most kids, I didn't even know. I'm just saying, even that part to know.
All right, so I'm a library kid. Right. Same thing, not necessarily games, but I grew up in the crack 80s. Uh-huh. So really, it wasn't favorable for me to go out. So thus, I always stayed indoors.
Right.
And we had a gazillion records. So that's how I ingested all the music. And I knew four blocks away on Chestnut Street in Philly, there was a library. And I would just go there, listen to all the records, read all the Rolling Stones, all the, you know, music books and whatnot. So I, too, would do that as well. And, like, the local library is one of my favorite spots. So was that, like, a destination for you if you weren't allowed to go out or...
No, you know, the truth was that I don't know. I was, because of television, I was always curious about stuff because it was kind of deep. Outside the house was like pimps and gangs and drug dealers, and then I'm watching Leave It to Beaver. And so then I've got this world, and I'm watching the Andy Griffith Show, and then outside it's like, if you don't have my money, I'll knock your motherfucking... And I'm like, oh. And then I was like, what is the reality? So when I would go to the library, I would just look through all the aisles at all the different things, and I saw those Shakespeare records, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And it was just, I just remember listening to it on our little stereo, and we had the little stereo that had the blinking lights.
Yes.
That, you know, had all the disco music kind of things on it. And everybody wanted to listen to The Temptations or Gladys Knight and stuff like that. And then I was like, no, this is my homework. And everybody's around the house listening to me listen to Othello. And I understood it.
I'm just mad I didn't think of that as a kid. I would have understood Shakespeare even more if I even thought that there were albums that I could just listen to instead of reading the work. Like,
even crazier full circle, because even in that like 20-second scene in Hollywood Shuffle where you guys are recreating, was it Macbeth or was it Othello?
It was King Lear.
At that point, that movie was such a revelation to me that when you got to there, half the time I was like, well, I don't know if we will ever do that sort of thing. But then I thought about it like, wait, what would Black Shakespeare look like? So that one scene in particular, like everything else was for humorous.
Yes, yes.
You know, like, and I took it as humor, but that was like one of my rare moments where I was like, like, I wonder what that life would look like. In other words, like opening the palette and expanding my brain to accept the fact that we can do anything. So... Yeah, that's a weird full circle moment because even me watching Hollywood Shuffle, based on your life experience, that even planted a seed for me. Like, oh, we could do much more than what we're doing now.
And yes, so, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So that's amazing. So what are your next steps? How did you know about A Second City?
I'm in theater. Okay. So I'm at X-Bag, and then I went to the Lamont Zeno Theater on the west side of Chicago.
Is this high school or is this college years?
This is high school.
Okay.
And so I find my way to theater, and so then my first director Paymoon Rami, who's in Chicago now, is a powerful brother. Him and his wife, Masiqua Myers, they were my first mentors. And so when you're around actors and people, and he was a casting director, so he cast me in Cooley High. He did the extras casting for Mahogany. And so you're constantly around like, oh, that's an agent over there. Oh, that's what, you know, and you get this information. And when you're hungry, like, you know, music for you, you're a sponge. And so I would just kind of, you know, like, okay, you know, what's an agent? Okay, where, acting class. Okay, I'm going to take an acting class. I'm going to take another acting class. Okay, how do I do a movie? If I could just say one line in the movie. And so I was just hungry, and I wasn't going to have anything stop me. I have to tell you this story. I really wouldn't be in show business. I was going to college at Illinois State University in Normal, Bloomington, and I was in the theater department, and I love theater, and then I'm down there, and on one side of the theater is John Malkovich and what's her name, Laurie Metcalf. They were on the other. Those are the actors. But for the black actors of the school, we had like little small parts, and so then I was like, oh, there's nothing. So there was this one teacher who, you know, because I was fascinated with New York, and I was like, what are the actors like in New York? I mean, all the best actors come out of New York. Even as a kid, I was like, oh, James Earl Jones is there, Cecily Tyson is there, Sidney Poitier, they all come out of New York. And I was asking her questions about New York this one day, and I was like, well, tell me about New York, you know, the actors in New York. And she looked at me and she said, stop asking about New York. You don't have what it takes to make it in this industry. You won't make it. You don't have it. Are you done? Are you through?
An actual adult said that?
Teacher, yes. And the way she said it to me, but let me explain something though. She hit me so hard, I left out of her office numb. And I was like, I'm not gonna make it. And I wondered, the campus just like lost. And I was like, you know, when an adult says something like that to you, it's an adult going like, you don't have it, you're not gonna make it. And I was wondering around the campus, like, what? Oh man, I'm not gonna make it. And then I had a moment. And I had this moment where I go, she doesn't know me. She doesn't know who I am. She doesn't know what my talent is, what's inside of me. And I shook it off and I said, I gotta see for myself. So I was so lost wandering the campus, I didn't even know where I was. I was just like, I'm not gonna make it, my dreams. And then I stopped, and when I shook it off, I looked up and there was a sign that says, transfer to exchange with any student in the country, exchange program. And I was like, I went in that office and said, I want to exchange with a student in New York. And we don't have a school in New York. We have a school in New Jersey. I said, I'll take it. And I transferred to William Patterson College in Patterson, New Jersey.
Close enough. Wow. Close enough.
Okay. Close enough. And so I would get on a bus from Port Authority and go to Manhattan on the weekends after I left school. And, you know, but that teacher, if
what
I saw her.
What year was this?
This is 76.
New York.
And so that's when I met Denzel.
Okay.
You know, it's like, but.
Did you see that teacher again?
But see, here's the thing. If I saw that teacher, I'd give her the biggest hug.
Right.
I'd give her the biggest hug because, like, a lot of my friends never left Chicago. And she broke me down so hard that day that I, you know, like the part of Robert Townsend that goes like, wait a minute now, who am I? What am I? And she, at that point, I called my mother right away. I said, I'm leaving this school. I'm going to New York. I'm going to be in New Jersey, but I got to get out of here now. But if she hadn't said that, I probably would have still been there, and I wouldn't be Robert Townsend. It was that one defining moment that she pushed me so hard that I was like, what am I going to do? And then I said, well, maybe I don't have it. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to see for myself. So I'm going to bet on me. And I, you know, and I was like, and then I was in New York and I was studying with Marlon Brando's acting teacher, Stella Adler. Mm-hmm. So I started studying with her.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I started studying at the Negro Ensemble Company. And
how quickly do these things happen? Because
Once she said that to me, I was only at USC for one semester. Once she said that to me, I got out.
Okay.
Because I was in the theater department and I was enjoying myself. But when she had that conversation, it's like, I'm a kid. And so if somebody says that to you and you, like, you hurt my feelings.
You physically feel it. Yeah.
I felt it. And so then I was like, I got to get out of here. So then I was gone.
But then the Stella Adler part, like
once I got to New York, it's kind of like, you know, I say this to artists all the time, you got to have a blueprint. And so I was like, okay, to get to the next level, I want to study with the best. Stella Adler's Marlon Brando, one of my favorite actors. I would watch all of his movies, you know, when I was that little boy, TV Guide. So then I'm studying with her, and then I go...
Wait, but how did you know to go to the top? Like...
How'd she take you? Like, she took you. She took, like, she...
Like, you said, I need the best acting teacher ever. Where is she? Oh. How did you even
Well, let me say this, you know, because it's kind of like, if you're hungry for it, if you really want it, then if you go like, I really want to be an actor, I want to be an actor, you know, who's the best acting teacher? Then, you know, it's Marlon Brando.
Right.
And so I'm like, that guy.
Right.
And so I just started, and then, you ask actors in New York, who's the best acting teacher? Oh, man, so-and-so. It's like if you went on the street right now and went on Hollywood Boulevard, and he says, who are the acting teachers? Then somebody would say, oh, Ivana Chubbuck is really good, and so-and-so fine is good.
Right.
So I ask, and then you got to audition to get in. When I audition to get in, I just did characters for you, and I wasn't even thinking about doing characters today. Back then, when I was really in character boy mode, where I would perform... You know, I would go in, you know, I made a living doing dog food commercials because I could do that invisible dog. They would bring me in and they would say, okay, a little chihuahua, a big dog, he's excited to see her. And I made money being a dog.
Yo, this is the greatest episode of all time.
So anyway,
Jimmy Jam, you out of here.
It's a wrap, Jim.
So anyway, when you say the whole thing of that teacher, I would hug her because in that moment she challenged me so hard that I was like, no, I got to see for me rather than like, you're right, I'm nothing. I was like, no. And I think a lot of people get squashed like that all the time.
Dog.
And so
that was your teacher. Imagine if some of your family members saying that to you.
Oh yeah,
like,
you know.
I know the squash feeling. So Jesus.
So can you answer the question now? What's the difference with a New York actor? What are they like?
You know what it is that it's not a New York actor. What it is that actors from all over the country that are really hungry go for the dream. They don't sit in, like, I'm in little small town in Iowa. They go like, I want it, and they're all hungry. And so they all have that same DNA of we want it. So, like, when you see people, it's like a bunch of eagles all come together, and you've left all the pigeons. And so all the eagles are standing there, and it's like, hey, man, you want this? I want this, too. You want it, too? Yeah, I want it, too. And so then all the eagles are together like this. So when I, you know, like when I, all the people that I met, like I remember, you know, when you talk about half the talent in Hollywood, they all had that eagle eye. They weren't sleeping. They were up. You know, like, we want it. How bad do you want it? Like, you're like, today I'm coming to talk, but I really, you know, I like you, and I'm meeting you today. And I'm like, oh, this brother, like, you're about something. So I don't do podcasts. Oh. You know, you're about something. And so when I see, it's kind of like when you talk about people's work, it's like millions of people can hear this. Yeah. You can plant seeds. Like, I've been in everybody's house, but I wasn't really in your house. But I was in your house.
Yeah.
And I was planting seeds of like, okay, if you see, you know, like, Say Amen, me and Howard Hewitt, I believe in God, I have faith. And so I said, let me plant this seed. Boom. It's a variety show, but let me plant this seed. Hey, you know what? I'm going to put a mixture of stuff in here. Okay, I'm going to do the bold, the black, the beautiful. We've never seen black people dressed up. And I said, you know, the Trojan horse here is going to be that we're going to see black people being funny and everything, but we're going to see them in the best clothes and the whole thing. And so there was always an agenda. You know what I mean? Like, everything is, you know, you're planting seeds. There's always an agenda behind it.
Do you want some tissues, Laia?
I'm sorry. I do need some tissues. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all good.
I'm so sorry. I'm having a real black moment.
I'm crying
moment.
Inside right now.
I don't know
right
what
now.
To... It's a lot, because everything you're saying is everything that we feel, but you articulated that.
All right, let's get some tissues, and we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with more Robert Townsend on Questlove Supreme.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, so we are back at Questlove Supreme with the man, with the master teacher, Robert Townsend. Okay, so I have a theory about why New York, because you raised a question, like, what was it about New York actors? Is it simply because in the acting world, like the mathletes or the snob actors are, their trial by fire is the Broadway stage? Like, you know, I'm an actor and I've done Broadway. So is that kind of, not the good version of the Scarlet Letter, but a badge of honor as opposed to just going straight to, like, what was it about L.A. that didn't call to you? That New York was calling to you?
Well, you know, what it is that New York is about craft. Like, to get on stage, like, when you're on stage, it's just you and the stage. And you don't get to go, cut, you know? Like, for me, what I love when I do, you know, perform or go in, I love theater. Like, when I was doing stand-up and all of that, there's something magical. Like, so when I see the actors in New York, they live it. They eat it. And where actors, like I work with some actors when I'm directing that, you know, like, you got two takes, you got three takes, that's it, Robert, four takes. And the really great actors, they go, how many more you want to do, 15? Yeah. Let's go again, Rob, let's go again, Rob, let's go again, let's go again. Now, I love those actors. Now, when I have actors, you have it. Robert, I think you have it. And I was like, no, I ain't. I mean, I fought with the, you know, don't get me started.
No,
because the thing is that, you know, so let me say this. You know, like, okay, coming into this room today, all this love. So first let me just say thank you for all the love.
Always,
you know,
man. Thank you.
I create what I create because at the end of the day, if we get a shot to create something special, why not strive for a classic? Why not strive for a hit? Why not strive? And it's not an ego thing, but it's kind of like
it's
when—
taking full advantage of the opportunity that you have.
That's all. You know, the thing for me is that I love what I do. I really love what I do. So part of the thing for me is that I have to give it my all. And I think with New York actors, you know, and it's not all of them. There's a select group that they focus on the craft like nobody's business. And I think it's like with comedians, the same thing. There's certain artists that just focus. And they, like Richard Pryor would focus. As all the demons he had, he would always raise that bar in terms of comedy. And so I think anytime I try to put my heart and soul into my work, that people would want to watch it again, people would want to remember the lines, you know.
Yeah. Like Soldier Story was a good example of that, right? Because that was a lot of New York actors.
Oh yeah, that was all of, you know, it's so funny because that was all of us from New York coming together because Denzel, you know, we were talking, you know, the other day, we would be at the unemployment office together and we would be at the actors lounge together, Actors Equity Lounge. And so we were all like Norman Jewison, yeah. You know, directed it, but Ruben Cannon cast it. And he was like, I want the best.
Purple.
He did The Color Purple as well. And he just wanted the best actors that he thought for the part, because Hollywood would go, hey, we're going to cast so-and-so in this part and so-and-so, and the casting could be all wrong. And he was like, no, 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 I want David Alan Grier to play this part. Adolf Caesar is going to play this part. Howard Rollins.
What was it like working with him, man? Like,
before you ask that, did he cast you in The Color Purple?
Ruben Cannon? Actually, he was in The Color Purple. I was an extra in The Color Purple.
Okay.
I was I was five or six, you know what I mean? But yeah, I had to audition for in front of him. And so I got cast as an extra. I was a kid. They shot it in North Carolina. That's my home. And so I went and auditioned, and he was there. And I had to read. Well, I wasn't reading, but the scene they gave us was, we had to act like you were hungry and that you were angry. So it was like, give me some jam. I'm hungry. Like he would tell a parent.
Right.
And I'm like 6 years old. And so the girl I was going up against, she was 9, and she was bigger. And she was like really angry. I was like, shit, she sound hungry for real. You know, she was like, give me some jam. I'm hungry. Like, she played it up so fucking big. I was like, what the fuck? And so I came out to audition. And again, I'm 6 years old. I have no idea what the fuck any of this shit is. Like, no one has told me anything. And so I came out and, like, you know, I'm thinking I failed. I'm like, okay, I don't know what this is, but I feel like I did a very bad job at it because I wasn't as animated as her, but I got it. And I looking back on it, I think what it was that I was so young and my fear was, like, kind of palpable. So being one of Mister's kids, this big Danny Glover just running around beating the shit out of everybody, that worked in my advantage because I was so young and I was so small and actually scared. And so I ended up getting the part as an extra for a couple of years. But I remember Ruben Cannon, man. I had to audition for him.
Good man, crazy. Good man.
Yeah, man.
I know that your experiences in trying to get to a particular platform led you to document and sort of hone it into a script that will eventually become Hollywood Shuffle.
Yes, sir.
Can you talk about...
That is still relevant today.
Right. Can you talk about the experiences you had as an actor during the shuffle, the audition shuffle, the trying to figure out where you fit in and all those things?
Well, you know, so back then, I'm living Keenan Ivory Wayans. Keenan moves to L.A. first, and then Keenan says, hey, Rob, these people are moving slow. I'm living in New York at the time.
How did you two meet?
We were both at the both comedians at the Improvisation in Manhattan. We were auditioning. We were online to audition, and we were the only two brothers online. And Keenan was coming home from Tuskegee because he was in college at Tuskegee.
Okay.
And so we were auditioning, and he was there that summer. And then we were hanging out like, yeah, bro, I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to do it too, man. Yeah, you know. And then Keenan was like, he goes, I got to do this for my family. And then he took me into the Chelsea Projects one time. And I go in there, and it's like, it's a four-bedroom house, and it's like all these kids. And I see Marlon, I see Sean, I see Kim, and they're all like these babies. And we used to walk from 45th and 9th Avenue, the Improv, to Pearl's Place on 96th. On the east side,
walk.
And we would be talking about our dreams. And it's like, man, and then one day I'm gonna be on the Tonight Show, man, we're gonna make movies. He says, I'm gonna get my family, my whole family out of there. And it was like, wow. You know? So that's how we met. So we had this thing about family and just success and winning.
Winky dinky dogs.
Right.
Man, so you made that first movie, Hollywood Shuffle, Credit Cards.
Yes, sir. Read.
Talk about it, man.
So let me explain the route there.
Yes. That's right. I want to know the route to Hollywood Shuffle.
So I'm a young actor in New York now. I'm doing dog food commercials, making money. I'm doing extra work. I was in The Warriors. I was in The Wiz as an extra, one of the citizens of Emerald City.
Welcome back. You're going to come back to that.
You know, and so, you know, I'm having these experiences, and I'm like an extra. And then
Do you have an agent? I hate to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but... You're dropping so many gems. Do you have an agent by this point?
Well, see, in New York back then, you could have many agents because whoever got you the job first.
Hell yeah.
Whoever got you the job first, so you'd be registered with this agent, that agent, that agent, that agent. And then whatever the job came in, whoever got to you first, because they didn't want to sign people, like you're signed exclusively.
Oh, okay.
So they go like, you could freelance. And so you've got 9 agents or 6 of the top people in commercial, theater, film, television, whoever got to you.
What is it like showing up on the... Because you're talking about, like, Mahogany and Cooley High and The Wiz and all these things. What's going through your mind, like, your first day on the set, like, looking at... Are you...
I just remember
talking to the actors or.
I just remember the first day, like when you talk about Mahogany, that was in Chicago. We were in the cold and it was Billy Dee doing the speech. And then I was behind, and then in, and I was in another scene behind Diana Ross in the welfare line. She's like, I want to get my old man back.
Right.
And then, but I just remember being out there. And it's like, you talk about being, you know, like my impressionist skills kick in because I was watching Billy Dee and it was like he was, like I was watching his mouth and then I was just studying him and it's like, you know, like the polls say we're way behind, you know, the polls say we're way behind. And then it's like, you want my arm to fall off? You know, it was like the way he talked with his mouth. And so
how do you channel someone? How long does it take before you actually nail them? Like, cause that's a gift where you.
It's not, you know, it's so funny. It's like, I can watch and listen. And then there's a certain, like if I really study, like I haven't done it in years, but back then, you know, it's kind of like Jimmy Stewart, there's a certain sound in his voice, or Bill Cosby, because you see, there's a sound. Right. And so I would hear different things. And so when I watched, I was out there in the cold watching him, and I just remember that whole speech, and I would just do it. And then when I got home, you know, I would do it like James Earl Jones, you know, like, you see, the daddy got to be the breadwinner, Claudine. the wherefore and the here, there, fraud.
Wait, what is stopping you from being just black, Rich Little? Because that was a thing. That was a thing in the 70s and 80s. That,
yeah.
Man of a thousand voices. Like,
you know, here's the thing. I enjoyed, so let me say this. I've been working on a one-man show about my life. And I think I did it in Berkeley, you know, because of Richard Pryor, because Richard Pryor broke away and went to Berkeley. And my friend Don Reed was like, you know, Rob, there's a theater up here in Berkeley. So I was working the show up there. And then now I'm going to take the show, you know, and workshop it in New York, you know, at the Public.
Jesus Christ.
So I'm in the middle of that.
I will follow.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So anyway, it's all the stories about my life. But I was... You know, I'll just say it like this. God has blessed me with a lot of talent. So I can write, I can direct, I can produce, and I'm a performer. But when I was doing the stand-up, you know, when I was doing all of that, then I started doing movies and I started, you know. So then Hollywood Shuffle came out of that.
How good is a living being an extra in the 70s and the 80s? Like, as far as survival is concerned, like, what is the pay good enough for you to say... Okay, or do you also have to like work at a bouncer at a nightclub, you know?
Well, see, I was hustling. I was such a hustler back then. I still am, but it was like back then I was like hustling really hard. So I did my extra work. I did television commercials because I would always say I could have dignity in 60 seconds. So I could, you know, like there one of my commercials somebody just put on social media and it was like, this is Eddie. Eddie's trying to get a job. Eddie's trying to get an education. He's working hard. That's why we're working with Eddie, you know. And I was playing, I was Eddie, you know. And so it's just somebody just posted it like 2 days ago.
You're the original Calvin?
I was the original Calvin. I was the original Calvin. I was the original Calvin. I was the original Calvin.
Like, yo, like what are our expectations? He's working at McDonald's. Like, right. Shit,
yeah, I was the original Calvin. So yeah. I did TV commercials. I would do theater every now and then. And like I said, my Dog Food commercials. And then I was doing, you know, I would do the demos for Bill Cosby for the Ford back then. So I would, they would say, Bill Cosby's not coming in. Can you do the voice? And it's like, there's something about Ford Motors that I like, you know, and I would do all the voices. So I was like doing different things. And auditioning for the movies. And then I was auditioning for all that stuff. So yeah, I was... The extra work didn't pay, but I got to tell you, okay, this one story is that when I was doing the film called The Warriors, Warriors, come out and play, yay, I was in the Rifts. So if you don't know the movie, there's a gang summit in New York City. All the gangs come together, and then the leader of the gang, Cyrus, is shot. And then they go, who did it? The Warriors. And the whole movie's about the Warriors trying to get home.
Trying to make it to the crib, yeah.
So anyway, I was in his gang, Cyrus's gang. So we were in Central Park shooting for 5 days in Central Park in the middle of the night. Now, here's the thing. They had like 700, 800 people out there. Now, there were probably 100 actors, and the rest were real gang members.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so here's how I changed my life in one night. So anyway, so they've got all the gang members and everything, and the prop department hands out chains, bottles, sticks, and all of this stuff. And so then you heard the first AD goes, when you hear the gunshot, then start running and use your weapons. And people were getting hurt. You know, people were like, where is the SAG rep? Where is the SAG rep? And I was seeing people get hurt, and the gang members, they was loving it. It's like, I'm going to hit somebody else with this chain next take. I'm going to knock somebody out with this chain. And so then I was like, oh, man, I don't want to get hurt. So then this is where the writer, director Robert Townsend was born. Cyrus's body fell over there. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the one soldier that won't run. I'll just run to the body and protect the body. So then that way I won't get hit by nothing. So then they go, camera A, camera B, camera C, and action. And everybody starts running chaos, and I run to the body, and I stay near the body, and I stand near the body, and I'm standing near the body. And then all of a sudden, I hear over the speaker, the first AD goes, the guy near the body, stay near the body. And so then they go, cut. First AD runs over to me. He goes, what's your name? I go, Robert Townsend. He goes, the director loved what you did. You just got upgraded. Now, ooh. I was supposed to make $66. Then I made $266.
Hey. That was rich back then.
That was rich. And so then the other actors are coming over like, why didn't you run like everybody else was supposed to run? And so then something strange happened. Then all of a sudden we took a 20-minute break. And then they go, okay, we're coming back. And then when I came back, I was standing where I was standing, and then they had everybody standing around me because the Walter Hill, the director, loved what I did. And then all of a sudden he goes, oh, wait a minute, that's right. There would be somebody that would stay with the body. Not everybody would run away. And then it looks like, you know, it's not in the film, but it, you know, but I got stills from it because I pretended to be my own business manager.
Right.
Oh, so yes, people like a...
Mr. Townsend would like to get some stills. He was in the film. They cut his part out, but he'd like to... Can we come over? I'm going to send a young black guy over there to take a look at it. And I'll pretend to be myself. You know, and so I went over and I got photos of it. But that day, I was like, I changed the scene. I said, wow. I changed the scene. And so then it was like the seed of being a director was planted because, and he says, you get upgraded. And then I was like, upgraded. And he was like, yeah, you're going to make, and I was like, a silent bit. And I was like, and so then every time I walked on the set, even though I was an extra, I walked on like I was a director. What are we shooting today? What's the first shot? You know.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Okay, I got to ask, since you're in New York and you're sort of a degree of comedy. Well, that's the thing. Like, because you're also talking about stand-up, which I think is a whole nother animal besides theater acting,
yes,
or acting. At this point, is what's happening at 30 Rock in your radar at all with Saturday Night Live? Like, by this point, I'm assuming it's the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know that Saturday Night Live's a thing? And
I auditioned for Saturday Night Live.
What year?
So you don't know the history. Okay, so here's the history. I am at the Improvisation, and back then Jay Leno's the host. You got Billy Crystal, you got Rodney Dangerfield, you got Robin Williams. Uh-huh. Everybody's there, and I'm one of the few brothers there, and I do my characters. And Silver Friedman, who just recently passed, she got the club from Bud Friedman in the divorce, and so she runs the club. And I am doing my stand-up and doing it. So Saturday Night Live is looking for somebody to be on the show. And so I put together all my characters, and they go, you got to have an audition. And I go into the audition, and I'm just like today you're filling my characters and what I do. But then, you know, like I'm a kid, and I'm like, pow, 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 pow. And so I get done with the audition, and I'm like, I think I smoked it. I think I really smoked it. And so then they go, you didn't get it. My agent calls and says, you didn't get it. I said, but, I said, it felt good in my spirit. I felt like I was doing it. And they go like, well, they're going to go with this guy named Eddie Murphy. And so Keenan knows him from Long Island and from Roosevelt Island. And he goes, you know, like, Eddie's really good. And I said, oh, okay. I said, I guess I... So then cut to... a book comes out about Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And so Jean Dominion, or I think her name is...
Yeah.
She's
the oral history of Saturday Night Live.
I think she wrote a book or something. Right. So then I started seeing all this stuff on social media, like Robert Towns was supposed to be on Saturday Night Live. Robert Towns was supposed to be... He lost out to Eddie Murphy. And I was like, what is this? In the book, I guess I really did give a great audition, and right. there was a big war in the room because they were like, no, he can do the voices and the characters and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, yeah. You know, but I mean, here's the thing.
We can only be one, though. We can only pick one.
We can only pick one. So
damn.
So in the book, it came out that I was up for it, and then in the ninth hour, I guess this guy Neil said, no, we should go. I mean, but here's the, everything worked out, but it was just, you know, like how you have something and you go like, I think I really did good in there. And then later on when the book came out, they says like they were debating on this new comedian named Robert Townsend. So
you found out how close you would have came. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right. So I totally interrupted your story from
Hollywood Shuffle.
Yes.
Yeah. Making that
now. What,
which one? I was like, yeah,
what's the straw that breaks the camel's back that leads to, all right, I gotta do this. Is it a string of close but no cigar, like lost roles or that sort of thing, or
no, it is the day I have the worst audition of my life. And so there is a director from England. He's doing a movie about pimps and hustlers. And so I go in to audition and...
I'm depressed already.
Right.
And so anyway... He humiliates me. He goes, no, you get out of the Cadillac. He's a bad mofo, you know. You Shonda Kwanda Nikwa, I know you're holding out on me, ho. And then I want you to say, biatch, biatch, biatch.
Oh, no.
And do it again this time, and this time stick your ass out. Can you stick your ass out? You black guys have big asses. Can you move your big ass around?
Oh, my God.
You know, okay, you want me to do it? Okay, hold your cock. Or do you call dick? Do you say dick, cock, dick? Hold your cock.
Is that a direction, so, Robert?
This is real. And so then...
What is this director directed before?
I didn't know. Okay. I was just going. So anyway, I finished the audition, and I'm outside the room, and I'm, you know, like you're a sellout at that point. You just want the job, and you're selling your soul. And I had sold my, because I was like, would you like to see a dick adjustment? You know, anything you can I could do differently? You know, I was like selling, and he was like, no, it's fine. No, don't apologize. And so I walk out. And the door is cracked open, and I can hear him talking. And he goes, he's all wrong. I need a nigga.
Wow.
And he's just screaming.
Oh,
and so
I leave, and I'm like, damn, that's what they think of me. Damn. So then I go to Keenan's house, and, you know, and Keenan sees a look on my face. And, you know, Keenan, because he has 10 brothers and sisters, he would always cook, and he could cook his butt off. So Keenan's in there cooking, and he goes, cock balls. And I was like, so mad. I was like, Keenan, we gonna die doing this bullshit, man. I said, fuck this, man. We gotta do something. And then that thing came out of my spirit, and I was like, we gotta make our own movies.
And what year is this in which you declare that?
This is 83.
Wow.
This is 83. And so Keenan goes, Rob, you never directed anything. You never made a short film. You know, you're talking about making a movie. And I was like, if we don't do this, we're going to die. We'll figure it out. Let's make a movie. And I had done, you know, I was making money on my dog food commercials, so I'd make a lot of money. And I had just done a Soldier Story with Denzel. And so I had like $60,000 saved in the bank. And I was like, you know, and everybody was like, you know, you're going to get a Porsche, you're going to get a Jag. What you going to do with that money? And I was like, let's make a movie. And it was like, but you never did it before. And I said, it doesn't look hard. I've been on enough sets. We could do this. And I basically taught myself how to make a film. And everything we did, the film was shot in 12 days, the whole film. 12 of the hardest days of my life. I'm co-writing with Keenan.
Can you walk me with
casting, from all the things.
From soup to nuts, like.
So I have $60,000 in the bank.
Right.
And so then I go, let's just make, and Keenan and I, you know, we start writing and we're like, let's just make a movie about our lives. You know, like people say, write what you know. Let's just start writing. It's like, let's do that audition. Let's do that part. Okay. Hey, you know what? And let's show them who we are. So I says, I want to always play a detective. And he goes, yeah, we could play a detective. And then I could play the bad guy. Why don't we call him Jerry Curl? Oh, dude, that'll be perfect. So then I'll be Sam Ace, like Humphrey Bogart was in the movies. Instead of Humphrey Bogart, I'm Sam Ace, and I'll be cool like Sam, and we do it in black and white. Yeah. Then it's like,
there's no point in which you're just like, we're in over our heads. Who are we kidding? Like,
no, because you know, I call it the salami theory. A salami is a piece of meat like this, and you just cut off one little piece. And so I just knew to cut off one little piece at a time. I wasn't trying to go like, ah, I was like, okay, this is how much I have for my rent and my gas and my car. We can't touch that. So we're going to take everything else and put it on the table. So then how much does it cost to make catering? We could do pasta. We could do chicken. We could do so-and-so and get it, you know, da-da-da-da. We could get the pastries and blah, 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 blah. So craft service taken care of. Hey, back then, you could rent the camera on a Thursday, say you're going to shoot for one day, and then you go like, I missed the deadline. I'll bring it back on Monday. So then you shoot for your whole weekend. Yeah. And then you shot with short ends. So I called Norma Jewison from A Soldier Story and Ron Swory, the producer, and I said, I'm going to make a movie. Can I have the leftover film from A Soldier Story? And he goes, you know, they call me Bobby. Take it all. So then I get the leftover film. And for those of you that don't know, short ends.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
So the concept of short ends, for those of you that understand film, is that a magazine to shoot, to load on the old school cameras was 10 minutes long. If the scene is 7 minutes, you have 3 minutes of film left over. You can't do the whole take again, so you just have 3 minutes. You go get another mag. So that 3 minutes of film, nobody can really shoot anything with 3 minutes. I go give it to me. So if I've got to do one scene and go, like, sometimes I only had like a minute of film, and I just say Winky Dinky Dog. And it was like, Winky Dinky Dog, we got it. It's rolled out. Okay, let's go. Moving on. And so reload. And so it would just be going that fast and that quick. And short ends. We couldn't afford the high editing places. So Keenan is always like, this is where we got into that brain thing, because Keenan was like, he says, Rob, where do they edit pornos at? Because if we go to a porno place, we could really edit over there. And so they said, I hear in Chatsworth they got porno places. So we went there initially.
What?
Got a deal to edit porno. It's me and 16 porn editors. And I had never heard anybody, direct porn. So then you hear like, you're like, I'm walking down the hall waiting on my cut, and then I can look in other people's room. I look in a room, and then you see the editor there, and he got a cigarette, and he's editing, and he's doing the whole thing, and then you can hear the director's voice, put your leg down, enjoy it, put your head back, put your leg down, Look, and I'm like, and they're just,
Cockballs.
And so the actors, you know, my whole thing was, I'm going to make this movie, and I'm going to take you through boot camp, because I started in theater when I was a kid. So I said, we're going to do acting exercises.
That's what I was wondering what you do.
We did actor exercises, warm-ups and all of that, rehearsing.
Wait, how did you even rally the troops?
Everybody,
like, wasn't Anne-Marie Johnson sort of established?
No, nobody was established.
I've seen her on extras and...
No, not that, back
the first
then.
Time I've ever seen her was Hollywood Shuffle.
I mean, she had done little things, but not really, like, popping.
Yeah. Okay. But even, like, John Witherspoon and...
No, John hadn't really... John had done stuff, but it was... You know, it was like... There was a time when... It was like the black exploitation, which was not exploitation. It was just movies where we were the leads. Right. You had that period with Melvin Van Peebles and all of those and Michael Schultz and Cooley High. And then there was, like, a little bit of pause where there were no movies, like, where we were. And then... Spike was in New York doing She's Gotta Have It while I was in L.A. working on Hollywood Shuffle.
Okay.
And so that was that time. And so there were actors that were working, but the work wasn't consistent. So then the thing for me was to say, look, I don't have any money to pay you, but when you're going to have a great time. We're going to make a movie. We're going to make history, you know, and
there's
work
some chicken
with me.
Over here at the craft services.
Right, right, exactly. Right, right.
And that was right. That was right. And so they were like, he's going to feed us and he's going to do this. And so, and I will have respect for your time. I will
always. Because they all have day jobs, right?
They all have day jobs. And so we shoot on the weekends. So I will get you in and get you out. And so the one thing I learned early on was, I know how to plan. And so I did the call sheets, and I knew we had to be invisible so that people wouldn't shut us down. So I go, we're going to shoot at this house, but park 3 blocks away. And here's where you can park and then walk over. And hey, don't hang out in front of the house, you know, hang in the back. Please be quiet so that we can shoot. And then we're gone. And then by the time we shot all of our outdoor stuff, like the Black Acting School, Sunday morning, people met in my house at 5 o'clock. We went to Nichols Canyon, and laid everything out, jumped in the van.
Mountain.
Yeah. Where we go, like,
saved the white woman.
You know, yeah. So by the time.
Well, what about, like, the beauty shop where Anne-Marie Johnson worked at? Like,
that was in, we made a deal where we said, hey, we will pay $100 plus cleanup, you know, for a couple of weeks if you let us shoot. And that was, like, on Crenshaw. So we just, you know.
Movie theater? I'm sorry.
The movie theater was the old Baldwin Theater that's not there anymore. And it was owned by these two brothers. And basically, we just said, you know, hey, we don't have a lot of money to pay you, you know, but we'll clean up, we'll mop the floors. And I think I mopped that theater for about a couple of weeks after it was done. And they said, hey, you can shoot, but you got to be out before the movie starts at 11 o'clock.
It was an active movie theater.
Yeah.
And you guys would shoot on the off hours.
What we shot before the movie started. So like back then.
In the morning.
We shot in the morning. So we'd get there. I think we got there like at 4 o'clock, set up, started shooting. We had to wrap out by 10:30, and then the movie started at 11.
Dude, the same way that The Disaster Artist was made about The Room.
Oh, yeah.
I need a movie made about how this movie got made. This is the first meta movie about making a movie about a movie about someone who didn't get to make movies. Yeah. So continue. So
everybody that I had ever auditioned against, you know, because the other thing is that you go like, oh, that guy's really a good actor. Or, oh, I've seen her in stuff before. She's really good. And so everybody I ever auditioned against, I said, hey, I'm trying to do this movie. Do you mind being in the movie with me? And they were like, sure. Have you ever directed? I said, no. You know, I said, but they knew coming out of the theater, I knew what I was talking about because I had been in theater. So everybody said yes, and I said, you know, I won't take my money first. Your money will be the first money. As soon as the money comes in, you will get paid first. And so that was the best day
so
of my life.
So you made a spec deal of, like, if this goes to the theater and makes money and whatnot.
Well, there was no deal. It was my word. It was my word, because we didn't have a lawyer or anything, so it was just my word. Like, I go, you have my word. If
well, there's nothing on paper, not a contract.
There's nothing on paper.
If you can't take it word, what good is your signature?
Well, you know, so basically, so here's the deal. So that was the happiest day of my life, because when the film is done, I'm just going to jump ahead a little bit and come back. But when the film is done, I say to the Samuel Goldwyn company, Sam Goldwyn says, I love this film. I want to distribute it. And so then I say, hey, can I get my check like now? And he goes like, well, you know, why you like you need it? He says, I said, well, I charged the rest of the movie on credit cards. And he was like, you charged your film on credit cards? And I was like, yeah. And so then I go, it's like $40,000 and I need that money like now. And he was like, you did? And he says, this is the best story ever. And I told him, I said, hey, I couldn't pay for, you know, food, but I could charge it. I said, I couldn't put, you know, so I went through how I did all this, the charging. So then he goes, we'll do that and we'll take care of everything. I said, but the first thing is that I got to pay all these actors because... I said, I told him. And so he says, okay. He says, how soon do you want to do it? We're going to sign a deal. And I said, how soon can you do it? And he goes, you know, like, it's Thursday. He says, it's going to take me some time to get it together for Friday. I said, can we do it Sunday at my house? And so Sunday at my house, I was living on Orange Drive and right off of Melrose. And I said to all the actors, meet at my house at this time. The accountant from the Goldwyn Company is going to be there. I have a one bedroom. You'll sign your contract in the bedroom. You'll wait in the living room. I have drinks and food and everything. And they got their checks before I got mine, and they all did it and came in my bedroom and they signed their contracts. And that was the happiest day, you know, of my life.
This is the first time I'm applauding on my own podcast, man.
Yo, man, what actor I specifically want to ask you about? Ludie Washington.
Yes, sir.
What role was he?
Yeah.
Winky Dinky Dog.
Oh,
he played Donald in Winky Dinky
Dog.
And
Bad. Michael Jackson's.
Yeah. And in House Party. And, he's,
right.
Hey, Peanut, fix me some of that Dick Gregory. Like,
right.
Like, he's just one of them actors that.
Ludie showed up, you know, because there were certain people that. Jackie Brown was the casting director because there were certain people that we knew and people that we didn't know. And Ludie showed up and just. And here's the thing. I worked at a place called Yankee Doodle Dandy in Chicago, and Keenan worked at McDonald's in New York, and so we both combined our experiences, and so Ludie was one of the cats that we used to work with. It was like that.
Whose
idea was it about hoe cakes? Because the only person I ever heard mention hoe cakes was James Brown on Live at the Apollo Volume 3, where he talks about...
That was John Weatherspoon. That was Spoon. So Spoon was improvising. Spoon, here's the thing. Again, when you ask these people, hey, I'm going to do a movie, and you haven't done a movie before, and and they're like, what is the hell? Who do you know? And so he was like, man, whatever you want me to do. And John Weatherspoon was like, he would just give you the world. And so when I said, okay, this is a flashback now, he's down and out, and so and so and so and so. Then John just started going off, and I had never heard hoe cakes either, and I just thought it was just brilliant.
At that point, did you know who? Melvin Van Peebles was, and that was his exact experience making Sweet Sweet Beck's badass song.
I didn't know anything because I kind of knew some directors, but I didn't know because I wasn't like, I'm going to be an independent filmmaker. I was just so fed up that I just go, I'm not going to complain. I never complain. It's like, let me just do something about it. Let's take action. So then later on, I discovered who he was in his films.
Well, probably the most established person of that ensemble is maybe Patrice Rushen, who by then was a platinum-selling artist. So how did you get her involved in the scoring of the film and all that stuff?
Well, you know, what it was that because I love movies, I know that music is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking for different people and then sending stuff to different people's agents, you know, because even though we were small, it was like, it's a small film, but, you know, at that point we had something in the can that people could look at. So her agent reached out and sent us a thing, her reel, because she had never really composed. Mm-hmm. She had done, you know, music, but then albums, it's like, you know how people go like, you know, and even Sam Goldwyn, you know, they were like, you know, like, wait, you know, you got an artist, maybe they can't compose. Maybe they, you know what I mean?
Because they are two different skills.
They're two different, like songwriter versus that. So I met with her and she was like, I'd love to do it. And, you know, it's just kind of like for me, there aren't a whole, back then, there might be a little bit more now, but there weren't a lot of black women composers or black women musical directors. Mm-hmm. So when she said, hey, I want to do it, you know, I knew her music, but then I saw her passion to, like, I can give you some music underneath here, and I can do this, and I can do this. And then when I did Partners in Crime, I said, you could be the musical director and come up, you know, give me the play-ons, playoffs. And so, and then she went on to do the, you know, the Emmys and everything. So, you know, it's just like, but it's just seeing it, just seeing it.
So what's, is there a moment of, for you, like completion? Is it after the first screening of it at whatever, I don't know if you guys did a premiere or not. Is it when Eddie Murphy hears about this and rents out the theater to see it? Like, at what point do you realize that, holy shit, this is going to be a thing?
You know, let me say this. When we were putting it together, editing and doing the whole thing, you know, Keenan and I, we it made us laugh. We don't, it's like, if we really laugh, like, oh, this Jerry Curl stuff, we were laughing. And it was just us
right.
laughing, having a good time. So I wasn't really like, everyone's going to love this. It really doesn't, you know, there's a part that you want to be loved. And then there's another part, like, I just want to do what makes me happy. Period. Period. And I think we were being true to that.
Okay, QLS fam, this is where we're stopping part one. And I know you heard Amir say it during the episode, but I have got to reiterate. This here episode is top 10 Questlove Supreme episodes of all time, okay? And you know every year, Questlove Supreme celebrates Black History Month. You know I do it every day. But anyway, Robert Townsend is Black History, which means what, class? He's American history. So make sure you come back for part two next week or check out the podcast feed. In the second part of this conversation, he speaks about Meteor Man and his talent and now Emmy Award-winning daughter, Sky, and so much more. Okay, can y'all tell? I really love this conversation. Make sure you come back.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.